interesting that Luke in the reading from the Acts of the Apostles and then in the Gospel, he says that the apostles and those folks that were with Jesus were witnesses. They were witnesses, and they're to talk about this stuff that happened. Being a witness, I mean, you know, these were not, I mean, you can't underestimate Peter, right? I mean, some girl around a campfire freaks him out enough that he denies the presence of Christ. I mean, sitting around a campfire and saying, hey, you're one of them. And it just flipped out. I mean, these guys were really afraid. They did not feel safe. They all feared for their life, for their safety. But then something happened in that whole process. And as I was looking at the readings and I was thinking about it, and then in the course of the last several weeks, of course, most of you know that I treat opiate addicts. It's my day job. And in working with these addicts, and the majority of them that I work with are women and some men, they have this profound trauma history. Just unspeakable things that have happened to them. And I started to ask them, when have you felt safe in your life? And they said, never. Never. Never felt safe. How do you deal with that pain? I get high. When did you start doing that? When I was 12. Have you had a day sober since you were 12? These are people in their 20s, 30s. No. Did you feel safe? And I kept on coming back to that and coming back to that, thinking about that. Because what happens with safety, if you feel safe, you communicate. You will not talk to someone that you do not feel safe with. I'm tying this back to Mom here. You know. And if you don't communicate, you do not build intimacy. You know? And you can apply this to husbands and wives, mothers and children, the church, and the members of the church, the hierarchy. However you cut that banana, safety leads to communication, which leads to intimacy, which leads to safety, which leads to deeper communication, which leads to more intimacy, that leads to safety. You will not trust your heart or your life or your voice or your innermost being without feeling safe. And so many of us don't. When we grow up, when we're little, we're like a book. Here we are. And then we take a hit, we take another hit, and we close off. And we close off, and we close off, and pretty soon we say, you rotten SOB, you're never going to do that to me again, and our hearts are closed because we're not going to be hurt anymore. What can a mother do for her children? Create a safe environment for that child to be able to communicate, for that child to be able to learn intimacy, that they can feel safe and create intimacy. But you know what? Some of us grew up and we didn't have a mother that did that. I did. But I was thinking, where did I feel the safest? And one word came to me. Grandma. Grandma. I could tell Grandma anything. I could go out in the ditch and get frogs and tadpoles and muddy, and it was okay. Grandma let me ride on the tractor. Grandma let me hold the puppies. Grandma cooked oatmeal for me on a wood stove. I could lay on Grandma's back, on Grandma's lap, and she would rub my back. and tell me it was going to be okay. I could go to sleep in the bedroom in that upper old farmhouse out on the farm and not have to worry about anything. Even one adult doesn't have to be a family member in somebody else's life can create safety that leads to communication, that leads to intimacy, that leads to more safety. Many of us know that family, that kitchen in the community where there's the mom and all the kids go. They all sit around that table. And what do you do when you first start talking to someone like that? You just test them. You want to see, can I talk to this person? Can I trust them? And the kids in that kitchen, they start talking. And the mom is there and she's talking. And gosh, I don't feel any judgment. I don't feel accused. I'm not told no. I can be who I am. And I feel safe. And then something horrible happens. I don't have anywhere to go, but I go to that kitchen and I talk to my friend's mom and I say, this is what happens to me. And she says, it'll be all right. But so many of us, we didn't have anywhere to go. And if you don't have anywhere to go, what do you learn? If you don't feel safe, don't talk. Children are to be seen and not heard. If you want to cry, I'll give you something to cry about. I don't want to hear it. Don't talk. If you can't talk, don't trust. If I can't tell you what's going on inside of me, I don't trust you, you're not going to know. I can put on the happy face and go through my day and work my job and do whatever, and I come home and my internal insides are breaking. Don't trust. If I can't talk, if I can't trust, ultimately don't feel. Don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. And if I can't feel, I turn it off. And I become a stone. The people that I work with, how do they learn to turn it off? They get high. And they stay high. And when they take the drug away, all of a sudden these emotions and these feelings rise up within them and they go, oh crap, and they get high again and they push it down. And it's this repeating cycle of destruction and pain and doom and loss. Instead of going from safety to communication to intimacy to safety, they go from don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. Don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. And that's the wheel that collapses them. Where do you feel safe? Is there anywhere in your life that you feel safe? Is there anywhere in your life that you feel intimacy? Anyone that you can talk to? Because that will build intimacy. And it just needs to be one person. Realize that, and it doesn't, children around you, they just have to have one adult that cares, that will listen to them. I tested this week. Now, this is my own test. Got a call. This is Ed Farquhar. I'm your insurance guy. I got this 20-year term life insurance guy. It's coming up to the end. I haven't died yet. It's like, oh, geez, okay. So he's going to come and he's going to talk about life insurance. Next to going to the dentist, this is the most exciting thing that happens in someone's life, to have a life insurance guy come. Because what you're ultimately talking about is when you die. It's like grandparents building a swing set for your kids, right? Your grandchildren. You're never going to swing on it, but you still build it. I mean, if I die, I'm not going to get any benefit from this life insurance, but my family will. Okay, fine, that's good enough. Life insurance guy comes. He's about my age. And he comes up to where I work, and he says, "Now, don't you do something with drugs and alcohol stuff?" And I said, "Yeah, you know, this is what I do and work and da 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 da." And he says, "Boy," he says, "I just don't understand those people. How can they do that?" And he said, "You know, I grew up in Kokomo, Indiana. And this guy's very wealthy. He's got a big. He's not just some little sales guy. He's the top banana, you know." He says, "I grew up in Kokomo, Indiana, and there were 10 brothers and sisters. And we had one bed, one mattress, and my parents used it. And my dad was a violent alcoholic." And he said, "I remember when I was 10 years old, a guy came to our door in a suit and a tie, and he was selling insurance. And he said, I remember saying, that's what I want to do when I grow up." Now, I mean, a doctor, a lawyer, an astronaut. For this guy, the only person he'd ever seen in a suit and a tie that showed up at the door was his insurance salesman. That's what he wanted to do. I was very successful. Got a home in Florida, got one, you know, paid cash for everything. Very, very, very successful. We started talking about resilience and what helps people make a jump. How come he was able to make this jump out of that horrible situation, and so many other people never were? And he was talking, and I said to him, "Let me ask you a question. Did your mom make you feel safe?" And he began to weep. And he said, "Oh, yeah. She was the only place I could go. She was the only place I could go. I'm not sure, but I think there's a connection between that resilience and the fact that his mother made him feel safe. His dad was a violent alcoholic. Beat the kids, beat mom. Total unsafe environment. But his mom made him feel safe. He could talk to her. He learned intimacy. And in that, he learned resilience." Jesus, ultimately, with the power and the presence of the Holy Spirit, made these 12 losers feel safe to the point where they could go out and change the world. Go preach to the whole world. You're kidding. We got 7 fishermen, a tax collector, the zealot, and these other losers. You're going to say, go out and preach to the whole world? It's absurd. It's the greatest argument for me is that Jesus actually did rise from the dead and did what he said he did. Because these losers would never have been able to accomplish that without the power and the presence of the Holy Spirit that led to communication, that led to intimacy, that led to safety, and that whole wheel moved within there. What about the church? I never felt particularly safe within the church. Because you always had that hammer hanging over you. I never felt particularly safe when I was in the seminary because you could get, you know, a knock on your door said, "We'd like to see you, you're out." I was not particularly bright. I was not particularly athletic or talented. But the one thing that I thought about that I have is I was resilient. I'd get knocked down and stand up and say, "Is that all you got? Throw another one, baby, because we're into it now." Somehow, in my family and in my relationship with God, I felt safe. I could communicate and begin to feel intimate, which led to more safety. That's crucial. So crucial. Be the safe place for someone in your life. for a child, for another adult, for a family member, for a stranger. Isn't that ultimately, we've been talking throughout Lent and Easter about the acts of mercy, the corporal and the spiritual acts of mercy? Do you know what, we talked about the spiritual acts of mercy. You know what four of the seven have in common? Listening. They're all about listening. And what happens when you listen? You create a safe place, right? You communicate. Be the safe place. Find a safe place. That leads to communication. That leads to intimacy. And what else are we seeking? And we're not talking physical intimacy. I deal with people every day that interpret intimacy as physical intimacy. And as most of us at our respective ages know, that's just the tip of the iceberg. It's sort of the frosting on the cake of intimacy. Because intimacy has to do with safety, has to do with communication, has to do with trust. Talking, feeling, trusting. That was the biggest learning for me as a married man. How do I create a safe environment for my wife? Because I was kind of a my way or the highway kind of guy. And that doesn't work well for safety and intimacy and communication, does it? No. Two ears, one mouth. Listen twice as much as you talk. That's sort of what I was learning. You can just begin to morph this out into your life. Where do you feel safe? Go there. Be a safe place. In that safe place, proclaim mercy. And for me, that was grandma.